All right, welcome back to the Constitutionals Podcast. I'm your host, Chad White, and if you didn't know, this is the premier podcast for the website, cpluscomedy.com. Like I just said, it's a website, cpluscomedy.com. Go there. All right, as the theme song finishes, the last 57 seconds. The last 57 seconds of the longest theme song in the world. What is the longest theme song in the world? Now let's go on this journey together. The longest theme song. You know what? I'm going to say a TV show theme song. There we go. It was Zir Tig, 3 minutes and 21 seconds. It's an Iranian show. The longest English language one is Twin Peaks, 2 minutes 36 seconds. This comes from somebody answering on Stack Exchange. I can barely hear myself. Do I have to turn up the microphone if we're in there? Oh my God, I do. Well, you're going to get a lot more versions of me. Here's a Reddit post. Longest static title sequence or intro. Okay. Game of Thrones, 140. Deep Space Nine, 148. Next Generation, 148. Voyager, 150. Bosom Buddies, 150. Yeah, Bosom Buddies is long. Prisoner, 215. Band of Brothers, 222. Never seen it. It's on the list, and I will never watch it. John Adams, 223. I've seen 20 seconds of that show. Dante's Cove, 228. Twin Peaks, 236. Interesting. Too Many Cooks, somebody referenced. That's very true. Anyway, that's a great thing to happen. What's been going on with me? I had the longest day ever, and I don't want to get into it. Just a very long day. I had a whole schedule planned out. Bank, recycling center, eye doctor, haircut. Had to move things around. Eye doctor cost $1,000. No, it cost $235, but still, it's expensive. It's ridiculous. Kids, make sure you have jobs that could have that give you benefits. What's going on? What else is going on? Nothing much for me. Apple's Vision Pro has not been released, but the reviewers have them. The reviews are in the wild. I haven't been able to sit down and watch. I've read a couple. I prefer for something so big to watch, to see some videos, but I haven't seen any videos except for one. I saw one, the Wall Street Journal video that Joanna Stern did. She took the Vision Pro to a Pennsylvanian cabin with her producers and camera people. And she shot her review up there. Interesting stuff. I read Nilay Patel's, is that his name? Nilay Patel. Oh, jeez, no. Now I'm going to seem like a racist. Okay, let's see. Yeah, Nilay Patel. Oh, look at me. Not a racist. I read his review on The Verge. It is very meaty. It's so long. And I've read a couple of other things here and there. But I would love to see more videos. So I'm excited to see. I think it's an interesting device. I really do think with technology like this, especially with it being in the first generation, for people to qualm their expectations and to not really mention the price point. I mean, when the first iPhone came out, and I hate to reference another Apple product, but when the first iPhone came out, yes, it was expensive. I mean, it's the first generation. It's always going to be expensive. But it's the first generation of its thing. The first Tesla came out. Yes, it's expensive because it is the first version of itself. Before the Model 3, you couldn't find a cheap Tesla unless you bought it afterhand. Aftermarket is what I meant to say. Maybe that's the title of this episode. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if we can find the funny. Find the funny after the fact. It's the worst title. But every review it goes in the cons section or and here's the bad thing. It's $3,500. Yeah, we know it's $3,500. I'm not gonna be mad about that. I'm reading or going to watch these reviews or these product videos because I'm interested in what this device is. when the Apple Car comes out in 20, I think they're aiming for 2030 something. But when that comes out, then I'm going to be interested in seeing what they do with the car. I don't care how much it costs. Because also, if someone is interested and they want it bad enough, then they're going to have the money for it. You know, and otherwise, there's other options for headsets out there. And it's also two things. There are other options. The Meta Quest 3 is out, and that's, I think it costs like a third as much or a seventh as much. I don't know. I think it might be a seventh. I think, how much is a Meta Quest 3? Meta Quest 3. I just saw one of my last Googles and said Meta Quest 3 Steam Deck. Trying to hook it up to the Steam Deck. So the Meta Quest 3 is $650. So that's about a seventh, I think. I don't know. I don't know the math. A seventh, a fifth, a sixth of how much the Apple Vision Pro costs. And then there's also the Meta Pro Business, Meta Quest Business, whatever. Don't worry about price. People will already complain about that by themselves. What's most important is how it works and how it functions as a device. And I think it functions, the things that they're doing with it, I think it does pretty well. This is a pretty cool thing. I have no interest in it. I'm not going to sit down and type at a table with a keyboard and just like look around at things. I don't want to do that. But I think it's a cool thing because now we have this competition, going back to the second thing. Now we have this competition between this expensive thing and the Meta expensive thing, and then the Meta Quest 3, and then the HTC Vive, and whatever else is out there. All right, let's get on with the stories. This first one comes from, also we're recording on I set up a schedule, recording on the first day. I mean, it's supposed to come out today, but also recording the day that. It's just, sometimes I'm recording on Thursday, and the show comes out on Thursday. The dog's on the couch. It's not supposed to be up there. But I can't do anything about it right now. Sometimes things happen on Fridays. And that's what I like to say for Fridays. But now Late Night Lately has to come out on Friday. And it's too much doing two things on Friday. All right. Look at him getting all snuggly back there. That son of a gun. What are you doing? Get off the couch. He doesn't even care. This first one comes from The Hollywood Reporter, written by Alex Weprin. YouTube passes 100 million subscribers for music and premium services. I constantly think about how many subscribers YouTube Music has. Because every single time I'm talking to somebody about YouTube Music, about music streaming services, they just, oh yeah, Spotify. Sometimes you get mentioned, oh, you have Apple Music. I'm like, I have YouTube Music. Now, I think there's one important thing to mention here. They have combined YouTube Music and YouTube Premium into, they're mentioning these numbers by one. And this Hollywood Reporter piece links to the blog post that Google announced these in. First things first, it includes trials. So that's a little bit of smudging of the spheres, of the numbers. Smudging of the numbers? I don't know. I don't know if that one's better. I said smudging of the spheres first. But smudging of the numbers, we'll see if that's a better title. We'll see where I land. Also, it was very interesting to note that YouTube Premium has been around since 2015. Okay. Now, where does that compare to Spotify listeners? Numbers, and also misspelled listeners wrong. Misspelled listeners wrong. So they have 574 million. And then Apple Music, list, oh, Jiminy Christmas. listeners, numbers, 88 million. This comes, and both of those numbers come from demandsage.com. What is the better product between all three? I think in terms of they, because they all offer something different. Apple Music has, out of the three of them, the best sound quality. Spotify has the most things to offer. And YouTube Music also includes YouTube Premium for now. We'll see what happens after that. But it also includes YouTube Premium, YouTube Music, and YouTube Premium, YouTube Music, whatever, same thing. And that's, I mean, that seems to be working for them because I still subscribe to it because I like YouTube, and it's just easier to have YouTube Music. Sometimes I get Spotify and Apple Music. They also have YouTube Music. Also has Google throws in and tests some other beta type things. They've introduced a better bit rate, but the normal person's not going to know or really give a hoot. They have an enhanced version of 1080p. That's what that is, 1080p HD. But it's just better bit rate, which means better coding in the end when it comes to watching video. They have new generative AI features for premium users right now. They have a samples tab, which is, I don't know. I think it's like their TikTok tab and for music, and I just don't click on it. They have a lightning fast way to discover new music. All right. Well, let's see. Last week, Conway the Machine. Jesus Christ. Chad, you need to know your music. They're on the same label. But last week, Benny the Butcher's Everybody Can't Go came out, and I listened to it once, and then all I got was Benny the Butcher stuff suggested to me. And I love Benny the Butcher. I've heard everything, but, I mean, your new way to discover music is, the way for me to discover music is to hit the Explore tab and to see a song from The Weeknd and Madonna and Playboi Carti from the show The Idol. It was canceled. And his new single's out. Let me see what the samples tab is. I have to turn it down because I don't want to. I was exactly right. It's just, I can't wait. Hold on. I don't want to get it. Oh, my God. Oh, Hot Boy and Future. Nobody Special. Whoa, man. There's some things happening. Like a dad who's never seen. Oh, they're shaking their butts. Those are my glasses. By the way, I was wearing one contact for a week, so I had to go to the eye doctor and get new things. But also, this eye that was, it was weaker, and now it's the same. Now they have the same prescription. And for list, they have samples and stuff. And then they have a completely customized radio building experience, which is fine. And then they brought podcast to YouTube Music. I just think that these things are becoming a little too inflated. Apple Music, in terms of simplicity, is the best one, and I like the shows that they offer up over on Apple Music too, and the music videos. I still think that, you know, there was a chance when YouTube Music and or YouTube rather had a chance to buy Spotify, I believe, at one point, and they should have done that, so we could have. Spotify could be, it is a big player, but it could be like this giant player with videos alongside of it. And that's it for that story. But continuing off of that, I just did an interview with a comedian where at like many times I said something along the lines of, and bouncing off of that, you know, something like that, and continuing off of that. And you said this earlier, but I did it like multiple times. So look for that in a month, almost exactly, probably a month and a week. This comes from the New York Times, written by Ben Cesario. Universal Music Group pulls songs from TikTok. That's very true. People like Drake and Taylor Swift, they'd already threatened to withdraw licenses for their tracks on social media, on TikTok, if they didn't have a new agreement. And Universal Music Group went ahead and said, this is what's happening. It also includes U2 and Ariana Grande. I didn't know U2 was on there. The contract expired on Wednesday, January 31st, 2024, and they pulled the music on the Tuesday. They published this giant open letter that is just filled with words. Accusing TikTok, this is from Cesario, of offering unsatisfactory payment for music and of allowing its platform to, quote, be flooded with AI-generated recordings that diluted the royalty pool for real human musicians. This is a huge step. This is a big, big, big step. One, TikTok is the biggest, the greatest in terms of scale social media platform there is right now. And nothing can beat it. And for Universal to come out and say, we're going to take two of the biggest artists in the world, along with the rest of our catalog, off of your platform, should really have TikTok kind of look at what's going on behind the scenes. You know, it's like, if this happened on YouTube, first of all, this wouldn't happen on YouTube. But if it did, then there would be cause for concern. And TikTok should really be going all out to rectify this and paying for the licenses and putting a big stop to what's happening. Here's an example of what things have happened. A video. Well, I mean, we already saw artists, people reuse AI generated voices of rappers like The Weeknd and rappers like Eminem and Drake, and have them sing songs they'd never sung before. I didn't call The Weeknd a rapper. I was interrupting my own thought. A video posted by Kylie Jenner, Cesario writes, in September, for example, using a song by Lana Del Rey, who is signed to Universal label, was silent with a note saying, the sound isn't available. Wow. Sound removed due to copyright restrictions. There was... It's so interesting how they tackle these things. When I posted on my Instagram for the cat's birthday last year, or year before last, rather, I made a bunch of fake cameos featuring famous cartoon cats, Garfield, the Pink Panther, and Sylvester. And I didn't use any audio. It was only video. It stayed up for that day, and it stayed up for a couple of months under the Stories Memories, whatever the hell it's called. And I went to go check it before her last birthday, and they were gone. They were just two, I think three out of the four of them were gone. So I looked insane. Just saying, it was, I think the one that stayed was Garfield, and then after it, I wrote a little note. It's so crazy. The extent of the fallout was unclear on Thursday, and a spokeswoman did not provide an estimate for how many videos would be affected by the change. On Thursday morning, some videos using Universal recordings appeared to be unaffected. I believe it's going to take some time for those things to hit, you know, maybe in a couple of days. Songs like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams just exploded in 2020. Yeah, I mean, your career could be made or broken, and also remade on TikTok because your song went huge. In a response to Universal, TikTok on Tuesday accused the music company in a statement of putting, of quote, their own greed above the interests of their artists and songwriters. saying that Universal had, quote, chosen to walk away from the powerful support of a platform with well over a billion users that serves as a free promotional and discovery vehicle for their talent. But that's also, you know, saying that is saying, you know, we don't have to pay that much because it's also promotion. And Drake or Ed Sheeran or U2 or Ariana Grande or whomever, they're going to be big. Bigger even, because their song hit big. Atomic City hit it big, and U2's gonna tour with it. Is that what that song's called? Yeah, Atomic City. They play that like crazy on SiriusXM. And not just on U2X Radio. They also play it on like the Spectrum and Lithium. And I'm not kidding. I guarantee, I think I heard it on 80s on 8 or something like that, or Classic Rewind. They're like, this is the new U2 song. What's going on? Contentious contract talks and even public barbs are a part of the standard terrain when it comes to major music companies and tech platforms negotiating over the all-important content licenses. That allow for these platforms to host music, but it is rare for a music company to make good on threats to remove this content. That happened in 2008 when Warner Music pulled thousands of music videos from YouTube, and that lasted 9 months. It only ended because YouTube agreed to share advertising revenue. I don't know, and no one is sure, when these could come back. If you can even post more videos with songs and things like that. My guess is that the 2008 was just a completely different time period. I mean, we're in the middle of another writer's strike. Oh my God. That's right. Doesn't it? Another writer's strike. Interesting. Election year. Oh, my God. Wow, that's true. Another election year. That's insane. Anyway, it's a similar time, but also a dissimilar time. Where Universal would have to be the one to move first. And yeah, you have Taylor Swift. You have Drake. And you're going to be missing out on some revenue. But right now, I don't think a lot of those people that they have are going to be touring. Ariana Grande's got a new album coming out, but she, yeah, it's going to have to be Universal right now. TikTok losing these artists might be like a drop in the bucket, if anything, or it might prove to be a gash in the wound. Ugh. Title? I'm going to write it down. I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hit the microphone, though. Maybe it will also be the artists who finally say, at some point, Taylor might say, hey, I'm missing the money, this extra money that made me a billionaire. Drake's like, watch the video if you want to see what happened. It wasn't funny. Now, next up, this comes from Billboard, written by Paul Green. Want a daytime Emmy in a music category? The Academy has some tasks for you. The National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences announced some rule changes on Thursday, February 1st. And now it looks like people in music categories for the daytime Emmys will have to add some more information in. Nominees will be required to provide complete publishing information and signed an additional NATS-issued licensing agreement allowing NATS Natus to use the music featured in ceremony clips so that they don't have to pay people. That's fun. The information will be distributed to nominees only. Failure to provide adequate information and proper contact information, and was all caps. Contact information for a legally authorized signer will result in a different clip being selected or replacement of the music with rights cleared music at Natas' discretion. Okay, so it looks like in 2023, during the Daytime Emmy Creatives Arts Ceremony in December, Jennifer Nettles and Bill Sherman won Outstanding Song, Original Song for Life is Sweet from American Anthems on PBS. The platoon of 10 composers won Outstanding Music Direction and, oh, a platoon of 10 composers, rather, Music Direction and Composition for Home on Apple TV+. This is the reason why I chose this story. Entry fees for the Daytime Emmys for program categories are $425 with a late fee of $500 if you're late. Entry fees for a performer, host, and craft categories are $350 with late fee of $400. That's so much money to be considered. I mean, oh my gosh, that's a lot of cash. And then to, like, not win in the end? I was just so interested in that. There's no real discussion around this. I want to use this last bit of time to talk about the Oscars, the Oscar nominations. This comes from Variety, Stephen Gatos. This is his name. Sorry, Barbie, but actors in fantasy films rarely enchant Oscar voters. And Rebecca Sun for The Hollywood Reporter, Barbiegate, colon. Why all Oscar snubs are not created equal. If you don't know, Barbie was nominated for 8 Oscars, including adapted screenplay, which people are in an uproar about. But also, you're nominated, Greta Gerwig, so calm down, instead of original. Now, it's... And Margot Robbie, but Greta was not nominated for director, and Margot Robbie was not nominated for lead actor, female actress. But America Ferrera and what's his name, Ryan Gosling, were nominated for supporting. To make it to the Oscars is a big effort in of itself. The movie made $1 billion. It has 8 nominations. I for the life of me, and I know where they're coming from. I understand it, but you're recognized. I mean, it's not like there are no women directors that were nominated for Oscars. There are 2 women this year that were nominated. We should be excited for them. This is great. How many times do we have 2 women nominees? You know, and I mean, this is the most diverse Oscars we've had in a long time. And I might say ever. Look at the Golden Globes. Look at the Emmys. We finally get brown people winning things. And you're mad about 2 white women who will have multiple chances. They'll have more chances than, I hate to say it, Greta Lee. Greta Lee was snubbed for Past Lives. People should be mad about that instead of mad about Margot Robbie, who's been to the Oscars multiple times, and Greta Gerwig, who has a couple of Oscars herself, her and her husband over there in their little cottage with their golden retrievers. I don't know if that's true. But what Steven is talking about in his piece about the fantasy film, I mean, it's very true. How many fantasy films have we seen really do well at the Oscars? And I'm talking about Star Wars. I'm talking about Marvel movies. And besides Suicide Squad, that is an Oscar-winning movie. Those movies don't tend to do very well, even if they're nominated. Black Panther and Spider-Man No Way Home were both nominated. I mean, that's it. 2001 A Space Odyssey was nominated in 1968 for Best Director, but nothing for the actors. Steven is citing Britain's much-respected Guardian newspaper, ranking the top 25 greatest sci-fi fantasy films of all time. E.T. the Extraterrestrial had a Best Picture, Director, and Screenplay, but nothing for the cast. Wizard of Oz got Best Picture. Wasn't the running for Best Picture, but none of that cast, including Judy Garland nor the dog, Pippin, or whatever the name of the dog was. First things first, the people who nominate for the Oscars, for the Academy, are your fellow actors, your fellow people who make the score, your fellow directors. You have, if you're going to be mad at anybody, you're going to be mad at those people. Don't be mad at, you know, the Academy, which is 50 people who, yes, in the end, they do choose. They all, everybody comes together, you know, and I don't know if it's 50 people. I don't know if it's that big or that small, but they do choose the winners. They decide the winners, but, you know, it takes a lot more than that. Shape of Water in 2017, Guillermo del Toro, one of his few movies starring people of color, starring a person of color, featuring a person of color even. I mean, if you're going to make a Pinocchio movie and it's animated, don't cast an entire cast of white people. It's a talking fox and you're going to put, you know, whatever. I've never seen it. I have no interest. I watched the new Disney one in Lou, and that one sucked. But it had people of color in it. But Shape of Water was the second movie to win Best Picture. And it deserved it. It's a great movie. I enjoyed that movie. I bought it. How many times have I seen it? Once. But I own it. Brad Pitt got an acting nomination for Curious Case of Benjamin Button. But I mean, if even though that's kind of... And then Taraji P. Henson also got a nomination as well. But I mean, even though that's still kind of based in reality. People are being very choosy with how mad they are about this stuff, and they're choosing to be too mad about it. Rebecca's son says it's too easy to chalk all of it up to sexism. And you're right. You can't, it's not a thing about pitting women against women or men controlling the world. I lost where I was. I was trying to find it. I'm right here, baby. Claiming misogyny also erases Justine Triet's accomplishment. The Anatomy of the Fall, another movie I will not watch because it stars all white people, is the only female director in the nominated category, so I was incorrect about there being two. Anyway, a harder but better question to answer is whether the Academy is biased against considering certain types of work correct, both in front and of and behind the camera, as more quote-unquote awards caliber. Yes. That part is what I agree with. That makes so much sense. Can we open up what thing? Look, I don't think every movie has to be considered for nomination at all. I've got a movie on my bookshelf called Avengers Grimm. It's a Z movie. I won't even put it as a B movie. It's not a B movie. It's not a C movie. It's not a D movie. It's a Z movie that was released around the same time as the Avengers, and it is about, you know, Frankenstein, I guess, and Wolfman. I don't know. I've never seen it. Red Riding Hood, and it's like Red Riding Hood and characters of that ilk putting together their own Avengers style team, super team. And that shouldn't be considered for nominations. But we need movies like that to parse from the bad stuff, or the stuff that is pulpy and the stuff that is not pulp, or, you know, whatever. It's, yeah, Black Panther can be nominated for an Oscar, and sure, it can be sitting next to La La Land. I mean, this is all kind of pointless in the end. The very point of Barbie is to project perfection. And because Barbie was always intended to be an avatar of a human womanhood, by extension, she also represents the expectation of women to be flawless, effortlessly so, colon, to do everything backwards and literally always in heels without breaking a sweat. With the caveats that artistic awards are always an exercise in subjectivity and that infinite factors are at play in determining them, a good question to ask is why a man playing a blonde avatar of a perfection felt like a braver feat than a woman doing the same. Perhaps the true irony of Barbie snubs was that Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie being made easy breezy beautiful look too easy. I mean, yeah. It's just, you can't be mad at all the things in the world. There's also a good piece in here that, and I swear I'm going to end this show soon, but she says, Rebecca's son says, it's not just a matter of unconscious bias, although that does continue to plague how audiences and voters engage with films that center and are told from the perspective of non-white characters. That's what the Woman King director Gina Blythe, Prince Blythewood explained to THR. After Greta Lee and who's Melton? I don't know who Melton is. Let's see who Melton is. Okay. Charles Melton, the actor. Charles Melton's the actor, and he's the star of that movie where that teacher kisses a boy or something like that. What's it called? It's got the redheaded actress in it. Hold on. Oh, I feel so bad now. But May, December. That's what the movie's called. May, December. I'm not going to look up the actress. I don't care. But after Greta Lee and Charles Melton failed to make the nominations cut, they're both of Asian percent. Asian descent. Asian percent is a great title for this episode. We'll see what happens. I'm going to write it down. Afterhand is out of the running. Smudging of the numbers, number two, Asian percent. That might be it. After Lee and Melton failed to make the nominations this year, some half-joked on social media that the Academy must have considered its job done when it comes to Asian representation after 2023's Everything, Everywhere, All at Once sweep. Okay. Yeah. As Viola, they're still lacking in Asian actors, Latino actors, indigenous actors, disabled actors. This is what's happening every single year. As Viola Davis said in her iconic 2015 Emmy speech, the only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that simply are not there. Issa Rae has been very vocal in the past couple of days about how she's been attacking executives, how they are canceling shows with black-led leads and with black leads and how they don't understand how important these shows are and how they're not with the times in that. And yes, that is very true. There are actors like Greta Lee who's been acting for a very long time. She's only been able to get small roles or supporting roles. And when it comes to past lives, she finally gets something big and substantial. And this moment for her that could really be make or break, even a nomination, is just taken away from her. And now people can only talk about Margot Robbie and how she deserved it over Greta Lee. I mean, they're not explicitly saying she deserved it, Greta Lee, but you know, that's what you're implying when you're not talking about the other person. Or when you have, what's his name? Ryan Gosling. I was going to say Ryan Goldberg. Ryan Gosling talking about how Margot should have been nominated. My man, you should be talking about how people like Charles Melton should be nominated. Or talk about how Sterling K. Brown is nominated. And this is a fantastic thing for him. You can't just be mad about this one thing, about this one white lady who's gonna have the chance over and over again to do this. Anyway, selective outrage. Isn't that a it's Chris Rock's stand-up special, Selective Outrage. I think it's a great title. And Selective Outrage also it's also how he felt after the slap. After his slap. Selective outrage. He was only mad after the fact. It's true. Listen, if you like what you heard here, head over to the website, cpluscomedy.com, where you can listen to every podcast I've done. Alongside this show, there's LinkedIn Logs, which is the business/jobs podcast, and There's Late Night Lately, which is the late, late night show. Check it out. If you want to see video versions of all of the shows, go to youtube.com/C+comedy. What else is there? You talk about some comedy. If you want to see me interview comedians, like the cast of In the Know on Peacock, J. Cameron Smith, Carl Tart, Caitlin Riley, Charlie Bushnell, Brandon Gardner, see me talk to the cast of Ted on Peacock. Watch on youtube.com/C+comedy the interviews. Check it out. And social media, C+comedy. TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, me at Chad Black White. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends, tell your family. Goodbye.